When I'm hearing about labels such as secure, insecure, another term we use a lot in this field is trauma. So society might look at someone that, someone might label as insecurely attached and say, "What's wrong with you? Why are you this way?" A trauma-informed therapist might ask, "What happened to you?" A liberation-oriented therapist would ask, "What happened to you and your people? What happened to you and your people? What is continuing to happen to you and your people? What is being perpetuated right now? How am I a part of this perpetuation? How can I follow your lead to bring about liberation for you and your people?" And that can be a place where we can really dive deeper into the healing that each of us deserve.
Welcome to Therapist Uncensored. Building on decades of professional experience, this podcast tackles neurobiology, modern attachment, and more in an honest way that's helpful in healing humans. Your session begins now with Dr. Ann Kelly and Sue Marriott.
Hey, everybody. Friendly reminder, if you haven't yet purchased Secure Relating, Holding Your Own in an Insecure World, it would be a wonderful time to do so. Pre-ordering really helps us. But also, if you don't want to spend the money, certainly just go to your local library and ask for it. That's another way to support us and kind of get the word out. So thank you for that if you've already done it. If not, please just check out the book. I think you'll be really impressed. SecureRelatingBook.com. Now, today's episode, we continue our conversation with Melody Lee. They describe themselves as a queer, non-binary, colony-born migrant. They're the founder of Inclusive Therapist, a social justice mental health community and directory. Their organization centers on the needs of marginalized communities, especially queer, trans, Black, Indigenous, and people of color. This is part two of our conversation on decolonizing mental health care delivery. Most people I know want to do the right thing, and then they want to learn, and this is a great step in that direction. Melody helps us learn to liberate ourselves from harmful ideas that have and continue to harm others and ourselves. I give you Melody Lee, part two of two. Melody, thank you for continuing the conversation. Can you give a quick thumbnail of who you are so they can understand whose voice they're hearing?
Good to be back with you, Sue, and listeners that are joining us. I am Melody Lee. I am a settler here on Turtle Island. I am a queer therapist of color and the founder of Inclusive Therapists and Mental Health Liberation, where we center on the healing for people with marginalized identities, such as Black, Indigenous, and people of color, Two-Spirit, LGBTQ+, intersections, neurodivergent, and disabled communities. Visit us at mentalhealthliberation.org, where you can learn more about our BIPOC Therapy Fund, where we extend free quality mental health care services for Black, Indigenous, and communities of color. And also, we have our Liberatory Student Support Circle, where we offer peer mentorship and mentor support to BIPOC students becoming the next generation of mental health activists and advocates.
And just quick question, because when you first were describing it, you included queer and two-spirit. Do you, when you say BIPOC, is that kind of generally included? Or if you just say BIPOC, are you not necessarily including the queer plus community? I'm just curious.
Yeah, the shorthand we often say is QT BIPOC.
Okay. QT. Queer, trans.
Yeah, queer, trans, BIPOC folks, but that is kind of an umbrella term we use for queer, trans, non-binary, intersex, asexual, aromantic, Black, Indigenous, and communities of color.
Okay, good to know. So today's episode, the first one was kind of a setup, right, a primer. And then today's episode, we're going to go a little bit more of a deep dive into mental health and some of these practices. And also what to do about it, which is really important. As we stir people up, we want to give them a direction and guidance. So can you describe like what is anti-oppressive and liberatory practices? Like what does that look like?
I think in order for us to begin conversation about what is anti-oppression, we need to have a clear idea of what oppression is. And I love the continuation of this conversation because in our last episode, we had all this terminology that's usually thrown around in the mental health space, like anti-racist, DEI, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion. Now I'm seeing more anti-oppressive, liberatory. What does it mean? And one thing I've noticed is that folks are actually co-opting these terms without the practice of it. And so firstly, we need to understand what oppression is. And at the core of oppression is dehumanization. So Paulo Freire, in Pedagogy of the Oppressed, I highly recommend that book, talks about dehumanization as the core of oppression. Violence is initiated by those who oppress, who exploit, who dehumanize others. And dehumanization is, you know, that can look many different ways. But, you know, first, we talked about the hierarchy, that certain humans are more valuable than others, right? People in positions of power, people that maintain supremacy or dominance over others. Yes, I'm speaking to white, cishet folks primarily, non-disabled folks, neurotypical folks that hold onto this power and say, those that are not like us are less human. But also when we are looking at this continuing global genocides that are happening around us, we see dehumanization by labels of how certain people's lives are more valuable than others, that certain people with certain skin tones are assumed to be either victims or perpetrators of violence simply by the color of their skin. And so these are examples of dehumanization that make up oppression. And so oppression can show up in so many different forms through different actions. I think the first place for us to start is, what are the ways that I look at individuals of human groups differently? Where did I learn these messages? And why do I believe certain people's lives are more valuable than others? Why do I believe certain people's labor or time is more valuable than others? Or why are certain people more deserving of care or access to care than others? So visit our website, inclusivetherapist.com/resources. We have a resource library with lots and lots of resources that examines and bring light to oppression and anti-oppression. So for people that are being oppressed, the healthy way to confront oppression is to liberate, is to resist oppression. It's to, in solidarity, advocate for liberation. And so anything that attempts to suppress, to silence folks' movement for their liberation is also another form of oppression.
So there's a cis white het listener, and cisgender means that your gender at birth is the gender in which you identify. I guess that's the best way to say it. I don't know. Do you have a better way of quickly describing what cisgender means?
One's gender assigned at birth is congruent with how they self-identify now.
So that's better said. Thank you. So that's the cis, het, heterosexual. So I was imagining, you know, one of our friends, one of our listeners, cis, white, het, male, listening. So I'm kind of tuning into this person, hearing you. And I would imagine that they're saying, but wait, I'm not doing that. What do you mean? I'm a good guy. I'm kind. I vote right. I know that's a starting point that's hard, but what would you say to that person who really their heart's open and they're saying, talk to me? What do you mean?
Yeah, I'm just going to say white cishet people because white cishet women accumulate privilege with white cishet men. And so there's the accumulation of privilege. And I'm so glad that you're here, that you are continuing to listen in. And the thing about structural oppression is it's not really about feelings. It doesn't really matter how people feel about it, because this is the system and structure that is in place by design. It's not about individual feelings or what one thinks. These systems are already here. This is embedded in all of our institutions, in our political system. We are on stolen land. So that sets up certain people to benefit from that. And so by default, other people are exploited by it. So my question is, if we know that these systems are in place, are we perpetuating these systems? Are we feeding these systems? Or the alternative is, are we actively resisting and dismantling these systems? And so I believe you. I believe that you can feel all these certain ways. And now I'm curious what actions you are taking that is actively anti-oppressive in solidarity to the collective liberation of people that are being actively oppressed by these systems.
I love that. I think that's a wonderful response, because we can only for so long say, but wait, you know, I'm a good person. You know, I didn't do that. That feigned innocence, that can last for about a second, because the next second you have someone telling you that there's harm that's been done. And if you are that good, open person, then you're going to listen and believe them. And then there's no longer can you say, I didn't know, or anything like that, right? That the clock turns on. And there's so much to learn and there's so much to unlearn. So I just really love what you just did about, like, you know, I believe you and show me the money. What is your feet doing? That it's not about your intention. So there's also this notion of intersectionality, right? That I'm also queer, but I'm very white. I have red hair. I'll never get pulled over by a police officer thinking that I'm a person of color. It will never happen. And in absolutely almost every other way, privileged, including that I would generally pass for straight. But there's a lot of people that don't. And I think this call for moving in solidarity and moving towards the collective is really important. And the collective can be very inclusive because we are complex creatures.
Yeah. So, of course, credit to Kimberly Crenshaw, who coined intersectionality. And last episode, we talked about colonialism, coloniality. Hussein Bolhan, please look up his work. It speaks a lot about stages of colonialism and the coloniality of being, right? Coloniality of power, what maintains these structures. And we can't talk about coloniality without talking about racialization. This construct of race was created in order to justify and to reinforce coloniality of land, of beinghood, of epistemology, of ideology, right? This is about cultural domination, religious domination. So this construct of race had to be created to then justify that. And so there also is no talk about intersectionality without talking about racialization. Because there are times when Black, Indigenous, and people of color are excluded from conversations about intersectionality, especially by white queer folks. I love y'all, and we can't keep centering y'all without just being absolutely attuned and centering also the intersection of racialization.
I'm even thinking about the fight for gay marriage and how that pulled so much energy and money, you know, away from all of these things around economic injustice, race, all the things that we also could have been paying attention to.
Yes. And in connection to that is also white feminism, whiteness and white feminism. And, you know, with girl power and girl boss and conversations about that, that is exclusionary of trans women. That's exclusionary of Black, Indigenous, and femmes and women of color. We're seeing this happening in the ongoing genocides around the world, where white women's feelings are prioritized over the mass murder of femmes and women of color, Black and brown, femmes and women and girls. And that is a form of violence. White feminism is absolutely a form of violence and coloniality. And that is deeply embedded in this field that is disproportionately operated by cishet white women. And we need to have conversations about dismantling whiteness, eradicating whiteness from our field in order to begin to talk about anti-oppressive work and liberatory work.
What does that mean, dismantling whiteness from our field?
If the construct of whiteness is new to you, firstly, I'm going to discourage you from reading White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo, because white folks are unable to see whiteness with as much clarity as people that have to endure whiteness and the harms of whiteness. So if you visit our website, inclusivetherapist.com/resources, we have an entire section dedicated on dismantling whiteness, white feminism, and white supremacy delusion, of books and resources written by Black, Indigenous, and people of color. So go there. It's funny to me that, you know, folks that want to dismantle whiteness will pay a white person for their book and their hot take. Listen and center on the experiences of Black, Indigenous, and people of color, first and foremost.
That's
Sue,
funny.
It's
funny because I'm thinking about, like, we're also told, you know, white people should be talking to white people about whiteness. And what you had said before, which I really loved, which was people of color know way more about whiteness than white people. They've been impacted by it and harmed by it, so that they're attuned and know a lot more about it. You know, whereas we're just figuring out that we even have a race. Newsflash. It's kind of like, oh, you know, like we don't have an accent or whatever. You know, we're so centered that it's just the way everybody is or is supposed to be. It's the norm.
Yes, it's the norm. And I agree. White people should talk to other white people about whiteness and hold one another accountable. But what I'm saying is, listen to Black, Indigenous, and people of color
about undoing whiteness.
Uh-huh. Follow our lead.
Right. No, I was just kind of laughing because it was like, on one hand, the message, and I'm understanding now, is like, don't turn to us to figure this out. This is something you need to go and figure out, which is true. I think that was the push to Robin DiAngelo's book of, like, you know, figure it out. But then also there's the message, which is a different message, which is stop centering ourselves if we really want to learn and unlearn some of these ways that we are continuing to perpetuate the problem. Then we need to be quiet and not be talking to each other. We need to sit and listen and learn from the folks that we have pushed out.
Yes. And to be really clear, do not buy Robin DiAngelo's book. Here are some other authors like Nikki Black, Maisha T. Hill, Ruby Hammond, Ijoma Oluwu. On Mediocre, talks about the dangerous legacy of white male America. There are so many BIPOC folks that have been talking about whiteness, that have been examining, critiquing, dismantling whiteness for so long. Listen to them. So check out the resources on our website.
That's great. And not her book, partly because, you know, if you're going to buy a book, buy a person of color book, as a form of dismantling this and censoring their voices versus a white person purchasing and making a white woman rich talking about race. Is that some of why that you're saying don't buy the book?
A question I ask when folks ask me about white fragility is, what tangible benefits have emerged from the study of so-called white fragility, aside from immense wealth for Robin DiAngelo? And if we ask BIPOC folks, how has the study of so-called white fragility benefited us? It hasn't. It's given folks language, but oftentimes excuses for their behavior. And this, again, you know, continuation of the conversation from last time, time is of the essence. We need action. We need accountability. And this ongoing study is not leading folks closer. It's not mobilizing folks.
Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin. So I'm in Texas. In Texas, getting sunshine is never a problem, but we've already gotten into the 90s, so summer is coming fast. And as a redhead, I have to be particularly careful with my skin. Now, every morning, I'm putting on OS1 Shield because our skin changes and needs something a little different as seasons change, not just on the surface, but at the cellular level. All of OneSkin's face and body products boost your skin's natural barrier to lock in moisture and help protect against the elements. I like OS1 Shield because it takes care of my skin from the inside out with products that do more than just protect against the sun's rays. It also repairs cellular damage that's already there that were caused by UV rays. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of skin health, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and feeling great. Get started today with 15% off using code TU at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code TU. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support Therapist Uncensored and tell them we sent you. Help your skin look and feel healthier for longer with OneSkin. There are a lot of things in life that you can and should compromise on, but mental health care is not one of them. Rather than thinking it's impossible to find a psychiatrist near you, or an available therapist that takes your insurance, or a primary care physician with openings, check out ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app and a website where you can search and compare hundreds of types of highly rated in-network doctors, including mental health providers, and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here because you've got more options than you would have ever imagined. You can find mental health providers who offer in-person appointments, virtual visits, or both, whatever works for you. The insurance they take and their fees are transparent. They are listed right there. Most importantly, you can get real patient reviews to get a feel for the person before you commit to setting that first appointment. And here's the thing. The typical wait time you see a mental health provider booked on ZocDoc is just 4 days. That's it. Sometimes you can even score same-day appointments. Remember, it's not just therapists. You can find dentists and every other kind of physician that you can think of. So whatever that your ache and pain is that's bothering you and you know you need to handle, ZocDoc is your go-to. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/TU. ZocDoc.com/TU. It's free. It's easy. Go for it. You know, I'm thinking about mental health delivery, and what do you see in with your practice with inclusive therapists too? When BIPOC people come to you and they've been to white therapists, what do we get wrong? You know, what are we missing? What are some of the common mistakes that happen that are kind of tangible? Because I'm just trying to bring it from the theoretical. What are the dumb things that we do, if you will?
What are the ignorant things, perhaps? Yeah, I say that just to offer some non-ableist terminology.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm modeling gratefulness for correction. I am grateful.
I think a good starting point for white clinicians that mean well, that desire to extend care to BIPOC service user, is first examining all the ways that one upholds white supremacist systems and white supremacy delusion. If therapists and clinicians can't even name that, then they pose great risk for BIPOC folks. I invite folks to start examining all the ways that they have been indoctrinated by these systems to believe that they are the norm, they are superior, and that their efforts are somehow noble because it's their role to save, to heal, to correct anybody else that does not fit into this privileged position. And so many white clinicians enter into this field really wanting to do good, but have this idea of what healing should look like, what wellness is, that has all been formed by, you know, white supremacist ideology and white cishet patriarchal normativity. So it starts with being able to really hold a mirror up to oneself before even attempting to say, how can I be of help or service?
Clinically, people will be familiar with bottom-up healing versus top-down healing. But I think that same thing applies, you know, that there's bottom-up change related to these movements, and then there's top-down. Could you say a little bit more about kind of that difference between the bottom-up and top-down, but with this liberation lens?
Yeah, bottom-up, top-down can be looked at a couple different ways. They're connected. There is the hierarchy of the professional in the position of power to deem what is best for the service user. And that is through our trainings, through our education that is steeped in, you know, colonial foundations to say, I think I know what is best for you. But bottom-up model centers on lived experience. And so if a white clinician doesn't have the lived experience of being a Black, Indigenous, or person of color, then there's no possible way that they can assume a position of an expert. But beyond the hierarchical lens, it is also related to how, you know, colonial psychology prizes on rationality of intellect over the body, felt experiences, and also cultural and community experiences. And the risk of that is pathologizing our ancestral and collective ways of being. And to say, oh, for example, you know, the prizing of individualization. I come from a collectivist culture and this idea of codependence as being something pathological is something that I continue to resist and to push back on. We know how to take care of one another. Our families are intergenerational by nature. You know, that is so central to us. But to be told, actually, you need to become more of an individual, firmer boundaries, that's going to help you. That was one example of the top-down model that just simply doesn't work.
That's a good one. And I think of the bottom up too. We talked about this also in the first conversation some, but about nature and, like, I think of it as going outward so that it's community and the natural world, and then versus the top down, yeah, being that intellectual university diagnosis, left brain, cognitive, that those kinds of things I think really help concretize some of what we're talking about what the difference is between a practice that is beginning to unlearn and incorporate some of these other notions that have been literally left out, you know, violently pushed out, exploited. You know, when you're in a position of power and you're being asked to give up power, that's a whole thing. And obviously people resist that. But there's really also this, like, yeah, you're being asked to give up power, but you're being given something that's so much better than power over. Like, it is so much better to be in relationship and in community and in nature. Like, that is such a more powerful position always. There's even such thing, you know, we were writing about this in the book, that, like, as you go up in power, you literally acquire what looks like a traumatic brain injury. Like, your brain changes for the worse, and it's bad for everybody. It's certainly bad for the people that are underneath you. So just an argument for incorporating these things and decolonizing your practice is a gain for your clients. It's a gain for you. It's not about giving something up. It's really and truly about this higher wisdom that we have gotten away from. And again, I'm not the person to speak to that. You are. And so many other people before us are. But this is just my teeny tiny little porthole in of like, I can see where this could be going. And it's so exciting and so positive.
It's rehumanizing. Remember, when we are perpetuating or part of oppressive systems, the core of oppression is to dehumanize. In order to dehumanize somebody else, I have to sever from my humanity, because by nature, we are all interconnected. And so if I uphold a system that I know is dehumanizing someone, I become less human myself. But when I, in solidarity, follow the lead of those that are marginalized, and I, you know, support folks' liberation and reclamation of humanity, then pieces of my humanity returns back to me. So that is how our healing is interconnected. That is why I love and work closely with white folks that are liberation oriented, because we heal one another, and we always have to center on the people that are being most severely impacted first.
Just kind of as we wrap up, I'm thinking about the folks that are listening. You know, one of the things we keep referencing the last one, but so that if you are not a person of color, a white person, if you're in a privileged position, that as you make a 360 and look around you, that you're not seeing a lot of what's there. That's one of the things I talked about. And so you have to like work to see it. And then you were speaking to folks that are BIPOC, marginalized, pushed out, and we're really encouraging them to find their community, and that we can't do this by ourselves. And, you know, the book that we just published is almost out, Secure Relating, Holding Your Own in an Insecure World, certainly does talk about some of these concepts, not nearly as articulately as you have, but we're trying to bring the idea of even the very notion of attachment, which is one of the basic fundamental things in, you know, mental health. It's one of the most studied concepts. Getting the idea of systems that create insecurity, we want you to think of that. The minute that you think of attachment, it has to be part of it, because you can't be secure by yourself. And to not just see the person in front of you as insecure or secure, even the term insecure is something that we're challenging. So this conversation kind of goes with this broader picture too of, that's just one example of bringing in this wisdom that we've lost through our institutions and through our learning, but reconnecting to this bigger picture of, you know, even from an attachment perspective, that we are a culmination of our history, our epigenetics, our ancestors, our future. We can even go forward, that we're creating as we heal, that we're healing the future as well. Like putting that lens on is something that we're actively wanting to promote. And so a lot of the people that listen are really interested in attachment and neurobiology. So we're very excited to just keep stretching even the term. And I really appreciate you helping us do that, really pushing us. What other things have we missed or that you would like to say to people directly? Would love to just end with any words that you have for us.
I'm loving what you're sharing. And when I'm hearing about labels such as secure, insecure, another term we use a lot in this field is trauma. So society might look at someone that, you know, someone might label as insecurely attached and say, what's wrong with you? Why are you this way? A trauma-informed therapist might ask, what happened to you? A liberation-oriented therapist would ask, what happened to you and your people? What happened to you and your people? What is continuing to happen to you and your people? What is being perpetuated right now? How am I a part of this perpetuation? How can I follow your lead to bring about liberation for you and your people? And that can be a place where we can really dive deeper into the healing that each of us deserve.
That's a mic drop right there. That was so well said. Thank you. So if people are interested in reaching out to you, how can they find you?
Visit our website, inclusivetherapist.com, mentalhealthliberation.org. We are most active on Instagram. If you want to say hi to me personally, you can find me at Melody Hope Lee, Lee spelled L-I, at Inclusive Therapist or at MH Liberation.
So thank you very much for all of your wisdom and experience and sharing so generously. We appreciate everybody listening, and we will see you around the bend. Hey, every now and then we want to remind everybody that we want to thank our sponsors. Without them, we would not be able to continue to provide this free and totally accessible around the globe, all over the world. So we really do appreciate our sponsors. If you would prefer an ad-free feed, you can certainly get that at therapistuncensored.com/join for as little as $5 a month. You can get an ad-free feed and be part of our NeuroNerd community. But in the meantime, again, we really love and appreciate our sponsors because it gives us these incredible opportunities. And our very first sponsor ever that has continued to be our sponsor, I wanted to give you an update on them because we are continuing to use them. That is AG1. Ann and I still use it daily. It's part of our morning routine, and here's why. We want to make sure we get all the high-quality vitamins, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens we need every day, and we are ridiculously busy. So one scoop of AG1 in our smoothie guarantees basic nutritional cornerstones are met before we are even out the door. It is efficient, which we appreciate, and it tastes really good. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you will certainly appreciate how hard stress is on the body for us. And anything that we can do to reduce stress is very good. And we also, I'm sure, appreciate how important our gut biome is. And it's always really hard to figure out what to do to help your gut biome. You know, you can definitely hear, you know, it affects mood, it affects thinking, it affects, you know, it's basically our second brain. But it's always hard to know kind of exactly what to do to have a good, healthy gut. Well, we turned to AG1 for that. Their parent company, Athletic Greens, keeps up with the latest science, and based on the latest data, they iterate their product to keep improving it. Plus, the ingredients are tested by a third party to ensure that what they say is what you get. So, based on my experience taking AG1 and my snooping around to make sure that they were a good company, I recommend you check them out at athleticgreens.com/therapistuncensored. Be sure and use that link because for our listeners, they will give you a free year supply of vitamin B and free travel packs for you to be able to take this superpower on the road with you. That's athleticgreens.com/therapistuncensored.
Therapist Uncensored is Ann Kelly and Sue Marriott. This podcast is edited by Jack Anderson.